Thanks for listening to Spraymakers, the podcast that dives deep into the world of water skiing with Chris Rossi and Trent Finlayson. It's imperative to have your ski between you and the boat at the end of the turn to be efficient on the water. This week, the guys talk through how to keep your ski moving with you through the turn.
Times when I was skiing really well, this really stuck out. And the times that I was skiing not as well and struggling, this topic stuck out. This topic being getting, you know, when I connect to the handle or when I finish the turn, one of my staple things is that the ski tip of the tip of the ski must be underneath the line of the rope when the rope comes tight. Very simple concept, and it's probably easy for you all to see. So you're making a turn, you've got the line between, you know, your inside hand has the handle, you're making a turn, the handle's connected to the pylon, and the tip of your ski, as you put your outside hand on, or as you, whatever, even easier would be as you finish the turn, or you start to accelerate, that moment that you get the rush from the boat and all that extra speed, that moment when you connect to that, making sure that the tip of the ski has gone underneath that line. That is something that when I was, you know, always when I was skiing well, I could look back at any picture or any video and that was happening. And then the further that that gap happens, the more I got away from my good skiing and the more I was struggling. So just thought we should maybe, you know, have a discussion about this. Does this resonate with you? Do you have a version of this? Do you think of it a little bit differently? Like, what does this mean to you?
Well, I'll have to find out, but what I think, you know, when I picture what you're talking about, and that is something I really do see with yours, with your skiing, or if I can go the opposite end of the spectrum, you know, I can think of an exact moment where that didn't happen for me. 39 off ball one, 2009 World Championships. I think this is what we're talking about. I mean, I tried to address the boat, or I tried to load, or I tried to establish, you know, lean or connection before my tip was under the rope, and I ended up with tip over the rope for a second.
So I think like onside tip over the rope.
Onside tip over the rope.
You cannot. I've tried so many times to make that work, and it gets caught up there. You got the load, and there is. It's bloop. You're down.
Yep. You're down. You either like literally fall. It when the rope comes tight, tip goes straight up. All angles gone, and you've got a brief moment to reestablish before the boat's ripping you down the lake. But at 39, that moment is
99.
Fleeting. Certainly, it's fleeting. I'll tell you what it means to me. Like for me, how I experience that is leading my ski all the way through the load. Like if I stop leading my ski, that's when this situation occurs, which I just described.
Can I interrupt real quick? And you just like, just for anybody that's new leading. Or anybody that doesn't, what is leading my ski, Trent, from Trent's perspective, just so, you know, if we have anybody that hasn't heard you describe it before or whatever, what is that?
It's just simply like, if you want to use the term center mass, it's having your mass lead your ankles. You know, so for me, a lefty, an onside turn, that just simply means, you know, my left hip is ahead of my left ankle. And as that ski starts to pull through the turn, as long as I keep, you know, moving at the same rate, keep leading or keep driving that left hip, my tip is going to stay down and come, you know, under the rope at the moment that the boat is, or as the boat is picking me up, that my ski is already going to be under the rope. Like to me, it's about, if you're going to have your tip under the rope before or as the boat picks you up, it simply means you need to travel far enough through your turn that the angle is set, you know, as the boat's picking you up.
Okay. I like it.
What does it mean to you? Was that in your, like when you were skiing your best, was that an objective? Was that a directive in your mind that, I'm going to make sure my tip comes under the rope? Or is it something you notice when you're doing other things correctly?
It's more, I would say it's probably more, you can't instantly change what that is. I think it is it's a warning sign or a green light sign, right? So for me, I just want to jump back. I think for me, just on the last conversation of what you were talking about, your emotion and how that leads it. I think what I describe, what you just described would be dropping into a turn. Like that's what I think that, like falling into a half pipe type of body moving, not moving, but body's actually moving over my ski. That's the drop in that creates the water to change its direction, the pressures and pull the ski through and all of that. So, you know what? My brain's a half fried right now. What did you just call it? When you
I call it leading.
Okay.
Leading
the turn. The turn. So you're leading the turn is what I would describe if I have some students of mine or people that I've follow me in the way I talk about it. I would say your term of leading in is my term of dropping in, you know, or leading the ski. Yep. So I think we're saying the same thing. We think of it a different way. This is something that right there. This is why these types of things are so important, because some of you listening are going to gravitate maybe a little bit more towards how I just described it. Some might gravitate more, and others are going to gravitate more towards how Trent just described it. We're really saying the same thing, but hearing it different ways can really help have that light bulb moment like we were talking about last episode, like having big light bulb moments. What are those and how do those happen? That's why, you know, we got to keep exploring in that realm. Okay. So back to the episode at hand. What is the next question there, Trent? Cause I've lost that one too.
I guess I said, is this a directive in your mind or is this the result of something else in your mind?
I think that it's a end result, meaning I use that. I look at that. I would have people in the boat. Like if I always ski with the same people, I'd say, hey man, does it look like my ski tip is under the rope as I finish? When I have the visual I have in my mind all the time is Andy Mapple. That guy, oh man, that ski tip. When you watch him, the moment he starts his lean off a turn is the moment that ski tip is underneath. Like it is very infrequent that you ever see him finish a turn with a gap in the distance between where the ski tip is and the rope. And sometimes when he was not in a great place, he did crazy stuff like a slam a two ball, but that slam and whatever he was doing allowed him to get his ski under the rope for a moment when the rope was mega peg line tight. That slam release of that energy allowed him to slide that ski under, and then when it came tight he was in a position that he could accept the load and accelerate quite efficiently. So for me, I did a lot of vision work when I was maybe early 2000s. I did a lot of my training day to day had to do with where I was looking you know, obviously working on the techniques that I wanted to work on, but what was I seeing while I was doing those? And so I really learned how to peek. I called it peeking, being able to use my peripheral vision. I think that's right. Using that term, like I was able to see more things and be aware of them. And so I could, while my vision was looking down the course as I was approaching apex and finishing the turn. But out of my peripheral on the inside, I could always see the boat, the line, and then I could actually, when I was skiing really well, I could actually see my ski tip come under the line as I was finishing my turn. So it's not something that I would necessarily, I always key on, but it is something that either I notice out of my peripheral or I will have people in the boat, you know, your training partner. I'm sure that a lot of you know that I video and I do a lot of video. So I video my passes so I can look at that from the pylon perspective. It's actually one of the important things to remember here. And that's why I like to have pylon video is if you have a person sitting on the outside of the passenger seat, when you don't line up the pylon, in the video, then it can look like you're not getting yourself through. And you actually are if you had. So perspective as you move sideways in the boat can make it look like that gap is off. Meaning,
good point.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're going to have somebody video and you really want them to, you know, kind of look and see. So that's, I would just say, sit right behind the pylon for those videos, just to help give a more accurate, look at what you're doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, you know, I wrote an article too long ago. I think it was called The Power Triangle.
Ah, I remember that. Yeah. It was in a Water Skier, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I remember it.
Yeah, they gave me I wanted to write for them because they gave me an entire year's worth of giving coaching. And I really liked the idea that I was giving coaching to USA Water Skier readers, their publication readers, consistent coaching throughout the year. I really was kind of a stickler about that. And they gave me the opportunity, so I ran with it. But in there, I wrote this article, Power Triangle, and I think, for me, it still holds up now. I mean, it may have evolved somewhat from there, but really, like, this concept was that, you know, when you let go and you start to extend in your reach zone and you're starting to extend to make the buoy, I really think that my outside hip and outside hand play in the same exact plane. They stay together. They don't, they don't go at different rates. So as my outside hand opens up, gets away, like as I reach, let go of the handle and I start to open up or let go and extend the ski away, my outside hand and my outside hip stay on the same rotational plane. So I open up on a semicircle and then I close to finish that turn. As I'm dropping in, my outside hip and outside hand are rotating, sliding, however you want to describe that, rotating through at the same pace so that when my outside hand comes on the handle, my outside hip is also basically creating this triangle with the handle that is, and the closer the closer that those are to all connecting at the same time, that means that I'm in what I would believe is what you're calling like a proper stance structure coming out of the turn. And so now I'm structurally lined up and with my body in relation to where the ski is in relation to where the boat's pull is coming to accept the load and acceleration that I'm about to generate. So I think that's go ahead.
Yeah. So I know exactly what you're talking about right now then. So, what you just described was your ski coming or your tip coming under the rope as the load or before the load comes on. Right. Mm-hmm. So I frame this whole thing, just alignment before load, meaning your body's stack or whatever, however you like to determine it, but your body's alignment, your structural alignment being in line with the load or simply being in line with the rope before the pull gets you.
Right. Exactly. Cool. So see how we work through this? See, now you can really see it. Good. So, but you can also see that like when I just described power triangle and what I was, the philosophy or what I kind of like to have happen, I just know that when the outside hand and hip rotate together and are tempoing at the same time, everything is very predictable and I know where I'm at. When things start, the more that separates and my outside hand is really flying in to try to grab the handle, meanwhile, I left my outside hip back, then I know that my ski tip is not going to come under the rope. I'm going to attach to the rope with my hand. My ski tip is still left in a turning position, meaning that really the ski tip is still pointed down the lake. My upper body is here. My hip is now away from the handle. And now the boat has me from load and is starting to pull me down the course. And then that's where the alignment isn't there to accept the load. And anybody that has, bad back problems, this is probably one of those things that you're missing on, that you're rotating upper body so quickly to try to, artificially finish the turn that you end up with this gap. And so, I mean, there's many, many reasons for the gap. I think maybe we should just a little describe why that gap is.
Happen.
Like, why do you see when you're coaching your students and you're working with people online and you're seeing this symptom that I you know, describe the way I describe or whatever. But when you see this, what do you think has caused them? Just I'll give it to you in an open sentence. Like, how do you want to approach this? Do you want to say this is why they're doing it, or this is what they should be doing? But however you want to attack it, what are you seeing, and things
like
that?
Like if I see people and they're okay, and I think there's a fascinating like back to the power drag. I think it's fascinating, and it's something I use a lot, and it's something that really turned on a light for me when I read it probably 15 years ago, and I want to just describe that triangle, what that power triangle is. And you tell me if this is how you intend it. But the way for me, it's a triangle. So for me, and tell me if I'm wrong, the three sides of the triangle are the plane across your shoulders, then the plane of your right arm down to the handle, the plane of your left arm down to the handle. Is that how you intended to describe it when you were creating a power triangle?
It's the unintended actually, but yes, it is.
Okay.
You know,
and then for me, I want to make sure that my hips, or like coming out of one ball, that my right hip is inside of that power triangle before the load comes on.
There you go. That's a great way to sum it up. That's a great way to sum it up. Yes.
Because you just take a picture of any water skier in their lean stance, and you can draw that triangle. Shoulder to shoulder is the base of the triangle. Down one arm to the handle. Down the other arm to the handle. There's your triangle. Inside that triangle needs to be your torso, mm-hmm. needs to be your inside hip. Mm-hmm. And if
your
it's
inside
not
hip or your trailing hip, what are you thinking?
I call inside hip the trailing hip. Like, okay. So coming out of one ball, my inside
right
hip would be my right hip.
Yep.
Okay. So, back to your question. Then I just want to make sure, cause again, that's something I use a lot I credit you. Don't worry.
It's okay.
That one has always stuck with me, and we've never talked about it. So that's really cool. So if I see someone who's getting load before they're aligned, or getting load before their tip is under the rope, or they're getting load before they're back inside that powerful triangle, to me, it's always, it's one of three things to me. One is they didn't have enough time or space to get there before the boat got them.
Ding.
Meaning if the boat's always racing away from you, if you're always going far slower than the boat at the finish of the turn, you just simply don't have enough time to complete the turn and get into that triangle. Mm-hmm. One or two, if the turn is just too slow, even if you have pretty good water speed and you have pretty good, you know, width on the boat, maybe an easy way of saying it, if the turn is just slow or the turn is interrupted or paused, you're not going to get there in time. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of two things. It's, you know, either you didn't have the opportunity to get there, or you didn't seize the opportunity to get there.
Mm-hmm. I think that's two great things. You can add to that by adding one where if you overly focus on something like counter rotation, mm-hmm. and you're not actually aware of where you are in relation to the handle, in relation to extending the ski away, meaning an untempoed huck of your outside arm into this extreme counter rotation, like that kind of stuff. That's why I don't teach counter rotation and I don't promote counter rotation, mm-hmm. because it's really hard to, if you were to stay on that plane with your outside hand, outside hip is the way I'm calling it. The outside hand is the one that lets go of the handle as you go into a turn. If those two both stayed together and you flung them way out, you have a lot of mass with a lot of torque that is going to need to have a massive torque back in. And I find that to be, I worked on that for a while and I found that to be unpredictable and hard to sustain accuracy through. So then you also see the other people who don't really understand what counter rotation is, but they know that if they counter rotate, something good can happen, and they throw that outside hand out there. The same end result happens when you throw the hand, you create a really sharp force that's at a specific time that will send your ski to do something really quick. But the problem is you then have to race that hand back in so fast that it outpaces the hip rotation and all of that, and creates this kind of overturn to slack hit, to rock back, to you know, all of that kind of skiing. So I think tempo inside of there is important as well. But I think you nailed it with your first two things are really the main causes of what we're talking about.
And you describing what you, you know, the, this off tempo in your turn, I think what you described was a potential cause of the symptom that I, you know, my blanket symptom of not seizing the you know, not seizing the opportunity to get back to where you wanted to go or to get back into that power triangle before the load gets you.
It's just so much way of words there, Trent. You make me not want to say anything because it's once you say something, it's like, however I'm going to go about saying it, it's never going to be as pretty or accurate or to the point. So I like how you just fire off like, yeah, I've got these three things. It would be this, this, or this. And my brain doesn't work that fast, my man.
So let's go like this because I think this will be really beneficial. So, you know, we've all been there or we've all had the ski buddy or we've all, you know, had a student we were trying to coach in that, I'll just go arbitrarily 28 off, beautiful, plenty of space. That nice, you know, lots of room, lots of speed, lots of space. Everything feels slow always or most of the time finding alignment before load or finding tip under the rope before pressure. And then they go to 32 and they get hung out to dry off one ball every time. You know, the boat's on them. So the alignment and the power they ski with at 28, at 32, they come out of one ball and they're bent over getting towed right into two ball. So right. where do you start then? Like, what typically would be the cause of that then? You know, if you can do it on an easier pass and then shorten the rope and it's not happening, where do you start? Cause we've all been there.
Oh man, where do I start with that? Well, I always go back to gates.
Yeah.
Oh, man, geez. Try to set yourself up for the most amount of success you can have, right? So
yeah,
go back and listen to some of the Spraymaker Gates episodes. They're a worthy listen and they're excellent because that way, you know, ultimately, if you can start on the right line, it's much easier to focus on skiing on the right line. You know, you start on the chaos line, you're going to ski a chaos line. And how, I mean, you know this, I just came up with a term for my son and I were talking about ski racing, snow ski racing. Sorry about that.
Yep.
And we want to learn to be comfortable in uncomfortable situations.
Wow.
Right? Like we want to put ourselves there all the time though in snow ski racing because you're trying to get through the course the fastest you can. But so anyway, the point is, is it easier to learn something when you set your, when you have more, this is, and this goes back to what your number one thing, right? When you have space and time, or is it easier to think about things when you have no space, no time, no room for error? So that's why I go back. So that's why I go back to gates and just say, you know, evaluate your gates to make sure that you're starting on a line that you can even attempt to think and be. So this is not something to attempt to address at your hardest passes without thinking about it at your easiest passes.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important. And then, you know, then just how do I start thinking about this? I mean, in micro terms, for me, I like to think about making sure I get my max lean or whatever. Yeah, I call it max lean around the first wake. I try to, you know, evaluate how much pressure do I have at that moment. When I have that pressure, then what I'm thinking about doing is just holding on to that pressure, not creating more as I come up out of my lean and through my edge change so that I'm harnessing just the equivalent that I had. I don't want to give it back. I don't want to take more. I just want to, you know, whatever that is, harness that. And then as I come up out of my lean into my pre-turn, I'm just feeling that energy. I want to make sure that I'm just doing that. And as I let go of the rope, I'm getting super micro here, but as I let go of the rope, I'm just slowly extending away from that handle. My inside hand knows where the tight rope is. I can feel that. I'm standing tall and going away from the handle. And so I have tension in my handle hand. And as I let go of my outside hand, my outside hip and hand stay together. So I think what I would describe that being is that I keep my core engaged through that through that motion. I think that's something that's really cool. So standing tall helps me to extend away at the same pace that I've been going, making sure I know where that tight rope is. I don't just give the rope to the inside. A reach is not a reach to the inside. A reach is actually the handle staying where it is and you extending outward away from it. But extending and setting yourself up, like taking a deep breath is something I think about, like make yourself just get big, extend and have that time. And then when it's then from there, I don't have, I've set up the time to do it. So now from apex, I just think about taking a step forward or dropping in, whatever, you know, those are my two. You know, Trent's going to go with leading my feet or, you know, that it's just what resonates to you is what's important. But from there, that's apex. At apex, I'm taking that step forward. I'm dropping in. And as I drop in, I'm leaving the handle where it is. I'm not swooping the handle back into my body. I'm leaving the handle there like I did a snow skier makes a pole plant. Like it's staying right there. The line's tight. I'm pivoting around it. And then my outside hand and my outside hip, just they're basically attached. They're separated in the fact that my hand's in the air and my hip is obviously wherever it needs to be. But they rotate back and draw a circle back to that connection point at the same rate. And they connect at the same time. And the end result that I know when this happens great is I see that ski tip slide under the rope as all of this is coming together. And that I just know at that point, I'm like, boom, here we go. Like I'm lined up. I've got everything through and that's where I'm going. So I don't know. That's a weird question to answer, but that's kind of
I think that's exactly it. And I feel like when people move to a harder pass, whether it's shorter rope, especially shorter rope, but it's also at a faster speed too, is they go through that process that you described initially from edge change all the way to the top of the reach, that they hasten that one where they end up going moving too fast. You know, I think you go from the common mistake is you go from your load and into the edge change. And then from edge change, people want to get into that turn phase too early, you know, so they end up cutting off that upward swing. And then it goes to, you know, problem number one, they don't have the opportunity to get back under the rope because they haven't advanced high enough on the boat. You know, the higher you advance on the boat, the more time you're going to have after the turn before the boat picks you back up.
Mm-hmm. I can think of myself at when I first started going to 28 off and the first times I started going to 35 off. Yeah. I can think of that. The buoys felt pretty far out for me at that time. Like when you first try those passes for me, and this is just my experience and what's coming out of my memory block, but that buoy felt like, wow, that is way wider to get out to. How do I get out there? And then this is my first attempt. And many afterwards, until it finally the light bulb goes on, was overload into the wakes because I'm never going to get out there. So I need more load. I need more pressure because I got to get out there. And you go hard and you go a little too long. You go past that second wake, like, I got to get out there. And then you've got so much load right there. Then right off the second wake, bam, complete unload. You know, Newton's law, equal and opposite reaction, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you go so hard that you then get ripped to the inside and now you're going really fast at a direction that's pointed straight at the buoy. And because you got ripped up at such a fast rate, you have no line tension either. So now you are just gliding flat and straight at a buoy with no rope tension. How are you able to extend yourself like a real reach and extend yourself away from the handle when you don't have tension to know where the end is? You can't go away from the end. So then you're just basically making a reach to the inside into more loose rope. And then there's no way to have that kind of coordinated feeling that we're talking about here. So it's really important. And so then what happens? Let's just talk about what happens at that deal, right? So now you're coming straight at the buoy. So if anything, your ski, as you're coming to the buoy, is still pointed outward, not down the course, not back towards the next buoy. It's still pointing outward when it hits the apex or it hits the buoy. And then you've got to try to force a turn. And then you know you have a parameter of, I only have a certain amount of downcourse ability that I can let this thing go before I'm going to run out of space and never make the next buoy anyway. So yeah. Now you've got the ski pointed out, your hips pointed out, your hand is extended, but it's not extended at the same rate. Your arm is to the inside. So what do? You pull the handle, the inside hand, to your body while rotating the outside in, leaving the hip behind you. Just an upper body swing is what it is. Just an upper body swing. And now the rope tightens up and comes. Now your ski is, at that point, is probably only pointed down the course still. You have connected now two hands to the handle and now are rocking backwards to find where security is. And that's mm-hmm. that's what the rock back is. You're rocking back to slow down and also catch where line is tight. And now are you in a structured, solid skiing position? I don't think so, because you've got your ski pointed down the course. That's not the direction you want to go. And you've got the load coming through your upper body with your hip back. That's like doing a deadlift, but not doing it with the right form. Yeah. And so what happens when people base their skiing around this, and you can get good at basically doing a hammer skid turn to a certain extent for different line lengths and things like that. But eventually what I described will catch up to you, and you're going to start catching heavy loads off the turn where your body is not in line. So it's like doing a squat or a deadlift or something that requires structure in order to stay healthy. You're not going to be doing that. And you're going to tax that lower body, that lower back. And then eventually we're going to start to have problems. So, yeah, there you go. Long-winded version of that, but I think
But I mean, that picture is burned in everyone's brain, right? Because we all get there. So, like what you just described for me is someone who's on a line that does not have the opportunity to get back into the triangle or to get tip under the rope, like you said before load. What about the other person then, or when you reflect on your own skiing? So now, you've graduated to that harder pass and now you are being more disciplined on maintaining body position and maintaining connection off the second wake through the entirety of the swing. Mm-hmm. Now I've created opportunity. So what about, and the way you can kind of measure this is I do this all the time. Like if someone blows a turn, typically the first question is like, what did you see coming in? Like, did you feel great space, great support, everything felt nice and slow, and then you blew it? Or was it the opposite? Was like you came in fast and you were looking for a lucky turn? Which one is it? So let's say you were being more disciplined off the wake. You did maintain connection, position, and direction for the entirety of the swing, and now you don't get back under the rope, or now your tip doesn't get under the rope before load. What is that? What's that implying?
That's a good question. Why don't you answer it for me?
Yeah. For me, that's okay. You had opportunity, but you didn't utilize the space that you had. So something stalled the turn, right? And that's just going to be, it's going to be weight distribution. Like it's going to be, okay, you didn't drop, you didn't commit to dropping in long enough. Or like, I'm going to say you didn't lead the ski long enough. You didn't stay on your front foot long enough. You weren't patient enough on the turn. However you want to say it, we're saying the same thing.
Right. Okay. I like that.
That's about like, when you're on the right line like that, to get back into that power triangle or to get your tip under the rope before there's load, that's yes, it's about turning, but it's also about traveling through space too. Like that tip under the rope can't happen at the buoy line. Right. If you just think about like if you picture what it would look like from overhead, like if you're up at the buoy line and you're not gonna be 90 degrees at the boat, but you're significantly up on the boat. If you're gonna get your tip under the rope at the buoy line, you'd be facing backwards, right? In order to do it.
Right.
So it's about traveling through space too. And that's where this idea of patience comes in, but not static patience. It's dynamic patience. It's leading, or dropping in and dropping in, continuing that forward motion. Or, if you're just going to go simple, staying on your front foot, because that's, that pressure you feel in your front foot tells you that your weight's moving forward. and committing to that motion to cover enough space until you're back into that triangle or until your tip is back under the rope.
Wow.
Right? Wow. Like,
that's amazing.
So it's
I mean, you just painted such a great visual for me.
And it's a problem that we all face, right? So, and even think about it in your own scheme, where like if you just blow a turn, you know, or you make it harder than it needed to be, like what if you, you know, we already painted the scenario of the person that did not have the opportunity, but if you're on the right line and you are nice and wide and you've been diligent off the wake, maintaining position and connection and direction, if you don't, what's going to cause you, what causes can keep you from finishing that turn, getting back under the rope?
Right. What are those causes? I mean,
well, to me, it's like, it's going to be anxiety, right? like a false sense of urgency, which especially like who hasn't come into four ball or five ball on a pass they really want to run, you know, and they just, you just get one step ahead of yourself. You know, you see it all the time. Or just go back to, you know, I gave that example in like, you know, it's obviously aging myself. I keep going back to examples that were in the early 2000s, but the 09 Worlds for me, I mean, in recollection, perfect gate, perfect line into one. But I tried to go from apex, which is, you know, at 39, it's the, you know, my toes outside of the buoy, to turn completion, full angle, full support of the boat. I tried to do that in two ski lengths instead of 15 ski lengths, you know? So what happens? Try and rotate the turn, try and lean on the rope all at the same time while I'm still beside the boat. Of course, my tip goes sky high. There's nothing to lean against. The boat's still beside me, not in front of me. Right. So a false sense of urgency, you know,
that's incredible, so, by the way. I mean, that is an incredible description of what every single one of us, whether it's me or our listeners, every single one of us can relate to that in a very easy way.
So it's either going to be, it's rotating your upper body. It's bottom line is if you don't finish that turn, if you're just going to go nuts and bolts, your weight went back. You know, your weight shifted to the tail of the ski. Because if your weight had continued to move into the tip of the ski or towards your direction, your desired direction of travel, the turn would have finished if you had enough space to finish it. Wow. So that's either, you know, pushing on your back foot is a great one to make your weight go back, or it's rotating your upper body. That's another great way to ensure that your weight transfers to the tail of the ski.
I got a thought that just popped in my mind. May not pertain or may pertain.
Yeah.
It was a question, but I can answer it too, which is,
yeah,
in a turn, Trent, what marks the apex of your turn?
So
I'll answer.
So the apex is the height of the swing, but you know how I really like to think about it?
Yeah.
Is your apex, doesn't matter how good your direction is, your apex is going to occur the moment that you have decelerated to match exactly the boat speed.
Ding, da, da, ding, 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 ding. I set you up, and that's what I really wanted you to come to, but, wow. and you nailed
awesome.
It. I mean, like that, like, wow. Like I put the ball on the tee and you just took it home without knowing really what was happening, but really, you know, it's not the buoy. So many people are so infatuated with the buoy. Yes, let's do everything right. Let's do it all right. And let's just turn on the backside of the buoy every time. But when things aren't right, and yes, guess what? We have to embrace the chaos. We have to, what did I say earlier? Be
comfortable in uncomfortable situations.
Right. Exactly, right? Like be comfortable in uncomfortable situations. Like where is your apex then? Did you do all the work leading into this, or are you just wanting the satisfaction of what you know it could have been had you done all the work, right? So yeah. I think that that's a really important thing is that for me, any rocking back out of a turn and rushing to get that outside hand in and all of these things just means you hadn't done the work leading up to it and
for sure.
or like this is going on with your second thing you were talking about, which is
not seeing the opportunity
and not seeing the apex. I think it could maybe be simplified into that. Not knowing where apex should be.
Yeah. And that goes back, you know, and that goes hand in hand with like the, like how much I love to think about, talk about, and help other people see the relationship with the boat. Yes. Your apex occurs when you've decelerated to match the boat's speed, not when you've reached that point 3 feet before the buoy.
Right. Exactly.
So, go ahead. How important then, like, you know, so like you said, when you're skiing your best, that's when you always see tip under the rope before there's pressure. So how hand in hand do those two ideals go, you know, understanding what really your apex is and finishing the turn correctly?
It's going to be everything. It's going to be, I mean, those two things can't work if they're not there together. I think that's one of the reasons why I spent a lot of time with that concept that I couldn't fall after a turn. You know, mm-hmm. I spent a year where I made it a rule that I had to get the full buoy in practice, not blow out at the half, like not blow out at the buoy, like complete the turn, find the finish of the turn, because I lost too many events where I ran 2.5 and one other person got a 3, or I ran 3.5 and somebody got a 4. And I started realizing, like, why am I falling in those moments? I'm throwing the Hail Mary, but why am I falling at that time? And why I'm falling is I'm not finding my apex at the right time. I'm trying to rush through that moment, and then the rope isn't there, and I have too many opportunities to fail in that zone. So I think that's a really good concept to understand and see, is that we're going to have many moments that we have to throw a more aggressive turn than we want because we're running out of space and all of these things, but you have to throw that moment very close to your actual apex, not your desired apex. I think that's a really important thing. Trent, you know, we're running long here. I just wanted to maybe let's finish this thing off with,
yeah,
you know, everyone's now excited about this and all these things. So maybe you walk me through how you set this up, or like how somebody might think about this. Like, is it like from centerline out to buoy, how to set it up, and give them a thought as we depart here on what they could maybe think about if this is something that resonates with them when they're out there on the water.
Yeah. Okay. So again, like, just in order to be able to finish the turn before there's load, you know, or achieve alignment before there's load, A, you have to create the space, right? And you're gonna be able to judge the space by how wide you're on the buoy. That's great. But what I'm talking about is you've got to create the upward space on the boat, meaning the higher up you, okay, where the boat picks you up or where the load occurs, it happens in the exact same spot every time as it relates to the boat. Okay, like you beside the boat, there's zero opportunity for load. That's just, you know, and we kind of lose sight of that because, you know, we can get around the buoys on longer line lengths, even though we're not beside the boat. But, you know, load, the boat is going to pick you up at point X. And it's, you know, I don't know what the degrees are, but it's, you know, it's somewhere off the back corner of the boat. The boat has to be ahead of you before it can start, you know, applying load to the handle. So you need to create enough space ahead of that subsequent load, if you're going to have enough time to get your angle set and get your hip to the handle, however you want to say it, get back into the power triangle before there's load. So in order to create the space, it takes space to create space. So that's why you're always going to go back to your setup. You know, even when I'm teaching people to first run the course, I need them to pull up high enough so they're ahead of that load, so they can have a longer run up to create space into the center line, because space into the center line is what's going to in turn create upward swing and upward space again. So go back to your gates, make sure that you're far enough ahead of the subsequent load that's coming to create enough swing to set this relationship with the boat up correctly. If you have the space, if you know you're wide on the buoy and everything feels nice and slow and controlled, now you have to utilize that, you know, you have to utilize the opportunity, create the opportunity by creating upward swing. Now use the opportunity by staying, if you want to say, patient in your turn, or if you want to say, stay on your front foot through the turn, you've got to travel. What you don't want to do is at the back of the turn, put on the brakes by rocking back and let the boat race ahead of you, putting you into that load zone before you've traveled far enough through the turn to get your hip back into that power triangle.